From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, they may seem like tasty little automatons swimming independently back to our nets, but it appears that salmon get by with a little help from their friends. There's trouble with aggressive sea lions in Sitka. There's trouble with them on the Columbia River, too, but they have a different, more permanent solution to their problem. All that, and it looks like they'll be counting salmon at Igoushik after all. Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
The market for salmon in Canada is about to get a little more complicated. Last week, Health Canada announced approval of Aqua Bounty's GMO salmon as the first genetically modified animal allowed for sale as a food product in Canada. Aqua Bounty's CEO Ron Stoddish said that it would take about a year to bring the product to market. Health Canada said they would not require any labeling on the genetically modified fish. However, Ruth Salmon, the executive director of the Canadian Aquaculture Industry Alliance, criticized the move, saying consumers who oppose the genetically modified fish won't know what they're buying. Meanwhile, in America, the Senate Appropriations Committee unanimously approved a bill that contains provisions requiring a labeling mandate for genetically engineered salmon sold in the U.S. Recommendations for nutritional advice on seafood, assistance for Alaska farmers, and support for critical food assistance programs are also included in that bill. It also contains language to amend the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act to update the FDA's seafood list to change the acceptable marketing name of brown king crab to golden king crab. Each summer, millions of salmon return to Bristol Bay and then swim on to the stream where they were born, to spawn and then die. Exactly what compels them to return to that exact same spot, though, is unknown. But scientists think that some hatchery-raised steelhead in Oregon might hold a clue. KDLG's Molly Dishner spoke with some experts who are trying to figure out why salmon choose to swim up any given stream.
Are salmon social creatures? That's the question a pair of researchers are trying to figure out.
50-some million fish last season migrated into Bristol Bay in the course of just a couple of weeks, and that's sort of a classic thing, is that the fish all come at the same time. And it's sort of curious to think, is there a potential social role in that? They all come as a major wave, and is it because that they are in these groups and that they are using social dynamics to help aid their migrations?
That was UAF Fisheries Professor Peter Wesley. By digging fake streams at an Oregon lab, he and colleague Andrew Birdall are trying to figure out why salmon choose the streams they do.
So we actually tested this idea by giving steelhead that had migrated home to a hatchery. We brought them to the Oregon Hatchery Research Center and put them in these artificial streams and gave them a choice between water that smelled more like home, so it had some of the water from their home hatchery, or all of the foreign water that came from the stream where the Hatchery Research Center was based. And so one of the things that we showed with this steelhead system, that indeed fish that are moving upstream and moving around are very social. They don't move independently. They're in groups moving around.
Wesley says there are plenty of details still to work out, and so far they just have a tantalizing teaser of some possible results. He and Birdall have been interested in this social side of fish behavior for some time, and their collaboration started with a paper that just looked at existing literature and data and came up with the big hypothesis.
Poses this idea of a collective social role of salmon as they're migrating home, such that salmon or other migratory fish can school together, and by being in groups, they can share information and pool their abilities to navigate and orient. And by doing so, the group is much more likely to get home than if the group was smaller or if the individual is traveling by itself, where the onus of getting to the right spot would all be on the individual.
Wesley says he thinks smell or pheromones play a role in salmon communication, but that's part of what he'd like to test. For now, the studies look at steelhead, mostly for simplicity. Wesley says they're a good proxy for salmon because they're pretty similar fish in terms of life history and making a predictable return to their birthplace.
They are a good model for these migratory sea-going fish that come back home. They have subtle differences in life history, but in terms of the social aspects and the migration and orientation, I think they're a good model.
Not everything about the study is a direct translation to the natural world, and there are plenty of changes and questions to address in the future. Wesley says they hope to repeat the experiment with a stronger scent of the home streams, and they might change the timing of the study to tie in more closely to when steelhead are actually on the move. Somewhere on the list, he says he'd also like to look at how wild fish fare.
The challenge is always trying to scale from what you're doing at sort of a experimental level up into the complexity of nature and trying to assess, you know, what you've done at this small controlled scale. Does it relate to nature as a whole? It's always a challenge.
But it's a challenge Wesley says he's excited to keep looking at. In Dillingham, I'm Molly Dishner.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvests for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Well, a 2,500-pound terrorist has been surprising sport and commercial fishermen outside of Sitka harbors. There's one thing he's after: fish. And his season is just ramping up. The federally protected mammal is causing more trouble than his weight for the city, as KCAW's Brielle Schaefer reports.
A stellar sea lion has been frequenting the Sealing Cove Fish Cleaning Station for more than a month now. When anglers cruise into the floating dock to fillet their catch, the animal beelines toward them for what he hopes is an easy meal. Police Lieutenant Lance Ewers had his own run-in with the sea lion after a day out on the water with his kids. He says he saw his friend cleaning fish by the runway on his way back into Sealing Cove and asked what was up. The sea lion had chased Ewers' friend away from the cleaning station. So, like any good detective, Ewers had to find out what was going on. He drove over to the dock and left his kids on the boat.
All of a sudden, the sea lion jumps up out of the water onto the fish cleaning station, like on the dock. And you would be surprised how agile they are, even out of water. It doesn't hop around or, like, you know, you see on National Geographic, the walruses, don't be fooled by the sea lion. They get around just fine.
The sea lion didn't see any fish, so it hopped back into the water, but not before sizing him up.
But it did not fear me. There was no fear in it whatsoever. It knew, you know, it was a sea lion, and I was a human, and I was in its neck of the woods.
And NOAA law enforcement says that is the problem. The animal is accustomed to humans and has come to associate the cleaning station with food. Al Duncan is the assistant special agent in charge with NOAA Fisheries Office of Law Enforcement in Sitka.
It's really a learned behavior on the sea lion's part, in particular because people, some of the reports that we've received is that people are actually taking fish carcasses and feeding the sea lions.
Duncan says NOAA talked to the city about possibly moving the fish cleaning station until the sea lion disassociates it with food. But that could cause further problems. Fish waste near the runway attracts birds, which causes safety hazards for airplanes. And cleaning fish inside the harbors is prohibited.
We posted some signs, do not feed. We posted some additional signs, making the public aware that there is an aggressive sea lion that seems to be running about this location, so that they're aware of it and could use good extreme caution when utilizing this facility.
And really, that's the best they can do. The sea lion is federally protected under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. That means the city and state have to stay hands off. Wildlife trooper Tim Hall said if a bear was showing the same aggressive behavior, the state would consider destroying it. Stan Eliason, the city's harbor master, says he can't even haze the sea lion away from the station without proper permits.
Yeah, it seems like they've got more protection than we do. So, but It's just how it goes.
He says he's working with NOAA's Protected Resources Division out of Juneau to figure out the best course of action with the sea lion.
You know, they've recommended putting, like, scarecrows out there, and I don't think that's going to work. You know, it's just, he's too comfortable with humans.
Sitka and Southeast have had problems with the massive marine mammals before. In 2014, a sea lion lunged out of the water and bit a commercial fisherman on his backside. A similar thing has happened in Petersburg, too. Eliasson says the sea lion's behavior is the worst he's ever seen. And the animal has now been reported in each of the city's five harbors. He's worried about the safety of harbor users, especially children. In one recent instance, this sea lion jumped aboard a man's boat, startling him to the point he fell over and caught his hand in a hook. There is one option to get rid of the sea lion without federal intervention: subsistence harvest. Alaska natives living on the coast are allowed to hunt the animals. Here's Eliasson.
No, you know, it'd be a win-win situation for myself, again, so I don't have to worry about, you know, the sea lion charging adults and as well as children and pets.
But until if and when that happens, Eliasson says,
don't feed the darn thing.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Brielle Schaefer.
Meanwhile, on the Columbia River, over 50 California sea lions have been trapped and euthanized since April 4th for consuming too many salmon and steelhead below the Bonneville Dam. Last year, 32 were killed. According to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, managers have permission to kill. Permanently remove is the euphemism they use, up to 92 California sea lion. They are not, unlike their cousins, the Steller sea lion, endangered. Though some Steller sea lions do feed at the Bonneville Dam, authorization has not been requested to kill any of them. Managers turn to euthanasia when harassment techniques such as firing seal bombs and rubber buckshot had no lasting effect.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders, and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
Well, it looks like there will now be a counting tower on the Aygusic River for the coming commercial salmon season. A partnership between two processors, the Village of Manicotek, Bristol Bay Native Association, and the Bristol Bay Science and Research Institute will fund the operation. Tim Sands is Fish and Game's area manager for the Nushagak Commercial Fishing District, which includes the Aygusic section.
I think this was led by BBNA to develop this agreement and get it so that Aygusic Tower will run. And BBSRI is going to manage that tower, but really it's the Village of Manicotek, Trident, and Peter Pan. They're the ones putting up most of they're putting up the cash money.
So all four West Side counting projects are now back online for the season. The Nushagak sonar starts operation on June 6th. Wood River begins counting on the 13th, Aygusic on the 22nd, and Togiak on July 1st.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KDLG's Molly Dishner and Dave Benninger in Dillingham, and KCAW's Brielle Schaefer in Sitka. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.